Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, July 2nd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great show lined up for you today. It is Monday, which means at least one thing, and that is we made it through another marvelous weekend, and it's the start of another week. And guess what? Yep, you guessed it. Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. And today we're going to be mainly talking about avian tuberculosis, amongst other few other topics. So we've got that going on today. As always, the chat room is slowly but surely filling up. We thank you for tuning in today live, or if you're listening to the archive. And today is the first day. You know, we just got done giving away a chicken coop Friday. Can you imagine? I mean, we just got done. We had a chicken coop contest in July, fan appreciation month, and now we're giving away yet another chicken coop in July. Did I say July? June. June was fan appreciation month. We gave away an awesome chicken coop on Friday. We surprised the winner, gave her a call live on the air, and today we're starting another chicken coop contest. No keychains, no little window decals, none of that junk. We're talking about some awesome prizes here, like we always give on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. But we're giving away another chicken coop. We're giving away a Snap-Lock chicken coop. Really cool, and it's been out for a little while. Then they wanted to have a Chicken Whisperer approved and give one away on the radio show. And they sent me one, and I looked at it, and I said, hey, this is a pretty neat concept. There's a lot of things I do like about it. It's meeting a need that has arisen as far as micro coops that we call them. And, but I think they could be updated and improved just a little bit regarding the predator factor. So I talked with them about that, and they've made some improvements. And so they're giving one away here. The Snap-Lock Chicken Coop folks, and here on the radio show for the month of July. And it, of course, is the Password Collection for Poultry Protection. So the way it works, folks, is every single day on our Facebook page, just go to facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer, we'll be posting a secret password of the day. There'll be 19 total passwords given, and let me kind of explain how that works. We do not issue passwords on the weekends. These are weekday only, and so basically it starts today, July the 2nd. The last password will be issued on Thursday, the 26th of July, and then we'll give away the coop on Friday, July 27th. So if you add up the weekdays between now and Thursday the 26th, that is 19 weekdays, so there'll be 19 secret passwords. Now, over the next couple of weeks, this week we should be here most every day except Wednesday because of the great holiday, but over the next 2 weeks after that, we'll be on the road. Radio shows will be spotty. We're going kind of on a little book tour. We're fighting for Backyard Poultry in Virginia Beach. We're stopping at a couple of sponsors' locations to do the radio show. So there may be some days there's no radio show, but that, and because we'll announce the passwords on the radio show for sure. But the days they're not a show, you're going to have to rely on Facebook. Again, we'll be posting, and Twitter, we'll be posting the passwords every day on Facebook and on Twitter. So you can always get the passwords there. Okay, but the days that there are radio shows, we'll be announcing them on the radio show as well. So you may not want to rely so much on the radio show to get your passwords as you want to on Facebook and Twitter, because we will be posting the passwords every day, Monday through Friday, on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Now, the way it works is on Friday the 27th, if you are the right caller, okay, if you're the right caller, say caller number 63, and then you happen to be the right caller, we bring you on air, and you can recite all 19 secret passwords. Then guess what? You're going to win that awesome, awesome chicken coop. So, yeah, someone was asking about the heat factor. For at least 7 days, possibly 10 days, I had a thermometer inside the coop, outside the coop, and in one of the big, fancy $3,000 wooden coops. And it was absolutely the same everywhere. It was not an issue. It was the same issue with the $3,000 wooden coop, the $450 roughly around that area retail Snap-Lock coop, and the temperature outside. So it did pass the heat test with no problems whatsoever regarding all of those. So I was pleased with the temperature test. The one thing that concerned me initially was the being predator-proof, and no coop on the planet is predator-proof, even these big $3,000 wooden coops. because you know as well as I do, even a mouse could chew right through that wood and get in access into your coop. So what else could chew through it? So even though it may have fancy windows and plywood doors and things like that and clamps. I don't think any coop in America is truly predator-proof, predator-resistant maybe, but as a chicken owner since day one, you know, a decade ago, I've been saying one of the biggest responsibilities we have as backyard chicken keepers is to keep our flock protected from predators. And of course, that includes, of course, a protective run, you know, burying that fence in the ground, having protective netting from hawks and owls and other flying predators, the burying the fence, and maybe even in concrete to prevent digging predators. And then again, second, having a predator resistant coop. So if they do actually penetrate into the run area, you've got a coop that it's the threat level two. Threat level one would be the run and the netting and everything else, so they can't get to the coop. And then threat level two would being that coop. So predator proof is very, very, very important. Looks like Pat is joining us today as well, along with the chicken doctor. So that is good. But first things first, regarding the business, and that is, it is the first radio show of July. Today is July 2nd. Tomorrow, we're hoping to have Arlena on, GardenWise Living with Arlena. We hope she'll be able to come on tomorrow because Wednesday, her regular day, is the 4th. We'll be celebrating the 4th, and so there will be no radio show. And then this coming Thursday, Dr. McRae, PhD, poultry scientist, professor, will be joining us. And then Friday is another fun Friday show. So we've got a pretty good week this week regarding the radio show and our guests and our topics. And then, but since it is the first radio show live broadcast in July, it was mentioned in the chat room that we need to celebrate Christmas in July. Especially to the chat room, chicken ears, and we appreciate that. It is Christmas in July. There's, God, before you know it, I'll be probably saying, well, we're going to be taking next week off for the Christmas holiday, and holy, holy cow, amazing. Actually, they'll probably start having Christmas stuff in the stores maybe even before Halloween this year. It seems like every year they get a little bit further out and further out and further out, so who knows what will happen this year. Alrighty, it is now time to, of course, bring on my my wonderful, wonderful partner in crime and co-host. That, of course, would be, please, big, put your hands together for... Who do you think? Yep, Pat Forman! Yeah. You guessed it. Alrighty, hey, Pat, how you doing?
Yeah, hey, Whisper. I'm doing great. You've been cutting in and out a little bit, and I'm wondering if I'm doing the same on the sound check. But all's well here in spite of that big storm we had Saturday. How sound check? How's it coming through?
Sounds good. Everybody says in the chat room right now, so no problems.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about some storms coming through Virginia. So how did your property fare that?
I have never seen a storm like that in my life, Whisper. There was no warning, no thunder, sort of no little, you know, it was just mildly overcast, and I was out taking a walk. I was about a quarter mile from my home, and that wind came up. It sounded like there was an invasion, and dust devils started swirling all around me. I got dust in my eyes. I started running as fast as I could to get back home because it was obvious something really big. Trees started to fall. I mean, it was like, oh, my God, it must have been a war zone. I finally got up to the house. I was gasping for my last molecule of oxygen, just trying to breathe. And my dog was with me. I didn't even look back to see if Woody was coming along. That was rough. I have not been so terrified, I think, ever than what that was. It was I could even feel myself start to be lifted up a couple of times because the winds were up to 80 miles an hour, I heard later on the show.
My.
It did huge damage around the Lexington area. I mean, there were three over 100-year-old trees down on Main Street, and the traffic was just blocked. And a lot of our county doesn't have power back yet. So here it is Monday. So it was a major storm. From I guess Baltimore was devastated, and so was Washington D.C.
That's really amazing. We saw that. We saw the news reports. I don't have a TV, so what I get basically is from internet news, and I can look at Doppler radar anywhere in the country, of course, like most people. And it was looking at that, just go through there. Yeah, it was really amazing. So we're glad that you're okay, and that you know, it wasn't. I guess anything and everything could be worse, but we're glad that.
You
made it through. We had some thunderstorms come through here last night. Thank goodness for rain. We went to church yesterday. We prayed for rain, and lo and behold, about 7 hours later, it came raining. Yeah, so it had not, I wouldn't say severe or even bad lightning and thunder. We did have a little bit of that, and then we had some torrential downpours. And so I looked out, and I was really worried about our corn, about getting it, you know, having it blown over or pelted down to the ground.
Yeah.
But I looked out today, and the garden seems to be absolutely perky and beautiful. So it didn't do any damage here to the property whatsoever. And we probably got somewhere between an inch and a half and 2 inches, I would say, last night. So I'm thrilled with that because I won't have to irrigate probably all week since we got that rain. I'm very thrilled. And I think tomorrow I'll probably start tilling my rows again, keeping the weeds down a little bit, and then continue picking because, man, it's just – coming through like crazy. Hey,
nice.
did you happen to go to that organic farming thing in Wilmington?
I did not.
Okay.
No. I would have liked to have, but I did not go.
I saw something on Google Alerts about it today, and I thought about you wondering if you were going to be there, had gone there or not. So I wasn't sure about it. I know that was kind of up there in your neck of the woods, so wasn't sure.
Yeah, there's a lot going on up here. I mean, my gosh, but yeah, organics taking off, and certainly local foods are taking off, which is sort of what we've been advocating all along for what the 3+ years have been on the show here. Yeah.
Absolutely. And our fourth year of broadcasting, actually, so with the radio show. Let's see, I think this is episode probably around 680. I don't know, episode 680.
Yeah, pretty up there.
Coming up on episode 700, so gotta love that. And let's see. Oh, booked the place we're going to be staying up at Virginia Beach, and really lucked out. I used Price. I became a Priceline negotiator, and which I occasionally do when I travel, and landed literally. No, they're not a sponsor of the show, though. We've had fun with Priceline in the past on the radio show, but I landed like a 3.5-star for a really, really good deal. And it's a beautiful place. I can't wait to partake in that. But heading up there to Virginia Beach to fight for chickens. Yep, we just don't sit on our couch and write crazy blogs from information we get off of Google. We actually get out and work and help people and we're soldiers on the ground. But we're heading up to Virginia Beach to help Tracy Okroy. She's a listener of the show, and she's been fighting for her right to keep backyard poultry there in Virginia Beach. So we're heading up there. I know a week from tomorrow, we will be there in Virginia Beach that evening. It says I'm breaking up a little bit, so we'll just try to see if we can't fix that. I may call back into the hotline, the switchboard here, and see what's going on with that. But next Tuesday, we'll be pulling into Virginia Beach, Virginia, And we're going to be, Poets Wife says she's been emailing the politician of the day there at Tracy's Post and whatnot. So I'll be speaking at the city council meeting that night, Tuesday night. I'm hoping that after the meeting we'll all have a nice event, Chicken Wings with the Chicken Whisperer there in Virginia Beach, have a good time and talk about strategy and whatnot. So we're heading up there for that. We're going to be stopping in Savannah with GQF and broadcasting from their headquarters. And then we'll be stopping in Titusville and broadcasting from their headquarters and possibly, though I don't think so, maybe Jacksonville. I got an email from them from a group there that's trying to get chickens legalized, but they're a sustainable group and they've been very, very busy. I got a message from them last week that was very simple. It was, "Have you been contacted yet?" And I was like, "No." And so it's they're kind of waiting to the last minute, so we may not be stopping in Jacksonville, but we might if they can get something geared up and whatnot. So we're taking the show on the road starting next Sunday. We'll be hitting the road for a week, and it'll be a week of business, and then we have a week of pleasure with the family down in Florida way. So we're forward to that. But really looking forward, always. Wish we didn't have to, but enjoy meeting the chicken folks and helping them fight their local battles with backyard poultry and slowly but surely changing them one by one. So we'll see what damage and what help we can do up there in Virginia Beach with this chicken fight. So that's what we're going to be hoping for, and I'll keep all y'all posted via the radio show and Facebook and Twitter and things like that. So we've got that going on. Amongst other things. But, yep, we're giving away another chicken coop here in July. We gave one away in June. You missed that show, Pat, Friday. It was so fun. We called the lady out in Montana. And you know how it is when they get a surprise call. They're like, "Oh, I never win anything. Me? I'm so excited. And this is, are you serious?" And, yeah, we're live radio and you're the winner. And, yeah, it was really, really fun. And so I got to give her a call today and get all of her information and see what coop that – see what coops he actually wants. You know, you get a choice of three, one choice of three different coops, and so I'm not sure if she wants the bungalow coop or the four square or the salt box. There's about three that she can choose from, and so I got to give her a call today. That's on my to-do list, and get her coop out there that she won. But, yep, we've started the password collection for poultry protection, and like I said, since we're going to be on the road for 2 weeks, 1 week we know there won't be any radio shows because it's family vacation time. But the next week, since we're on the road a lot, there may or may not be a radio show 1 or 2 days if we're on the road and have poor connectivity. So basically, Facebook and Twitter will be the main place where you can get those daily secret passwords. When there is a radio show, of course, I will announce them on the show, but your fallback and your security will be on our Facebook page at facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer or the Twitter page. If you're on Twitter, we can follow us at the @ Backyard Poultry. So we've got that on.
Yeah. Hey, Whisper, just to put a footnote in here, too, I have a really important meeting at 1 that I'll need to be heading off to, so I'll sign off just a little bit before 1, and if there's a graceful way to just thank that, I'll do that. But just forewarned is forearmed. Monday, summers are crazy. People are going 20 different ways, and this is the only day we could arrange for all of us to get together.
Not a problem. When you have to head out, and we'll let you serenade us on your way out the door. That'll be just fine. So
I wouldn't subject you to that.
Come on, a little bok bok here and a bok bok there. Come on, you can do it.
We'll see. So Peter must be in the wings, is he?
Absolutely. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com, is with us, and we're talking about, many people don't even know this, but today we're going to be talking about avian tuberculosis. So Peter is joining us right now. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hey, Andy. Hey, Pat. How's everybody doing?
Hey, Peter. Welcome. Good to hear your voice again. How are you doing? How's your health? Are you back in the saddle completely?
Oh, pretty much. I had a visit with the cardiologist last Thursday, and he was quite surprised at my progress in such a short period of time, and gave me a clean bill of health, which makes it easier for me to to continue ramping up my exercise program. They had me on such a narrow band of what my heart rate could be. In other words, I was only allowed to go between 99 and 111, and that doesn't leave you a whole.
That's pretty good.
It doesn't leave you a whole lot, and now it's unrestricted based on symptoms. If I should have any chest pain or anything like that, then I would have to discontinue what I'm doing and be reevaluated.
Congratulations.
Thank
you.
You
can go up to 150 now. You do your spin classes and
gets up about 135, 140 on a fairly vigorous treadmill exercise. I don't know if most people realize, when you get on a treadmill, doing it flat, I could probably go for an hour, hour and a half easily at 3.5 miles an hour. But when you start to increase the incline on that thing, you start sucking wind pretty quick. And, I've never been able to do well on it. And I was, even when I was in very good physical shape, I would never really fared out very well on any of the stress tests that I was ever given over my lifetime. Things just never worked out for me with those things. I just didn't do well on them. And, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I played racquetball every day. And,
Is that right? Uh-huh.
Yep. And not for 5 minutes either. A lot of people go and they hit the ball around for a few minutes, spend 2 hours talking to everybody, and then they claim they played racquetball. And I played, and I played competitively. I wasn't any good at it, but it doesn't really matter.
Wow.
I enjoyed it and did it for the exercise. And, as far as, my ability to breathe and all that junk, you figure you're pretty good. Now get on a treadmill and just start sucking wind like crazy and rode a bike all the time and did all that kind of stuff. So I was very proud of myself this last time because on a treadmill, on a stress test deal, it starts out at 10 degrees incline, and I think it was 2.4 miles per hour, and they do that for the first, I believe it's the first 3 minutes, and then after that it jumps up to 14 degrees at, 3 miles an hour, some wacko thing, and I was able to complete 7.5 minutes before I... hollered no mas. So I was done after 7.5 minutes, which is a monumental breakthrough for me as well. So, and I had a heart rate of about 135 at that point. So, and the strap that you put around your chest with all the wires and junk attached to it was a little bit restricted too. But if you loosen it up, then the thing falls down to your knees. And so you just have to live with it from that standpoint. Keeps you from getting that deep breath as often as you need to. So that was part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I was happy with 7.5 minutes. The doctor was very, very enthused with it from the standpoint of looking at my overall cholesterol and all of those numbers that I've gone over with you guys before. They've all taken a nosedive. My weight has taken a nosedive. He actually was, because right now I'm about, fully clothed, shorts, sneakers, shirt, and whatever. I'm about 206 pounds, so if you take all of that off, you probably got another couple of pounds at least of food and of clothing and stuff. So probably looking somewhere 203, 204. That's probably where my real weight is. So he was kind of questioning if I wanted to continue to lose weight, which I thought was interesting. But
Now, have you been doing the nitrous oxide thing? You were telling us about a book quite some time ago.
Yeah, in actuality, he gave me to go ahead and do whatever I wanted to do. He wasn't sure he was 100% behind all of the research on it. And so I'm looking into a little bit more of it, and there are methods to do it through diet. And I want to be careful because... just to give you an example, my blood pressure this morning when I went to cardio rehab. See, I'm still doing that because it's number one, it's inexpensive. Number two, I can go 6 days a week to it. And number three, if something happens, I'm right in a place where they can do something about it. Like there's one of the guys I go to the thing with. I don't go there with him, but I know him from going there, and he's a fellow that's here in town, and both of his heart attacks have come while he's exercising at the YMCA, and he's been lucky to survive both of them. And he now
really?
Does the same. Yeah, he does. He does the same thing now. He goes to the rehab facility because you can do just as much there as you can anywhere else, basically. You know, and they've got all the, you know, they got the crash cart and all that junk right there. That if you need it, that you can get, you know, immediate help. So, you know, those kind of things have worked out pretty well. So that's why I do what I do there. And anyway, that's working out real well. But I go in there and I do a 5-minute warm up, and then I do 35 minutes on the treadmill at 10 degrees incline, 3.5 miles an hour. That's a pretty good clip when you're, you know, when you're recovering from the heart attack. And then on the other side of that, I have on occasion I've gone 30 to 35 minutes at 14 degrees at 2.5 miles an hour, which is pretty good too. And he was impressed with all that. And I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm trying to find what works for me and stay with it and just keep increasing. My whole, I have clear defined goals in my mind as to where I want to go with it. So, you know, I'm progressing very well. He was actually quite surprised because I'm sure that in looking around his office and all the people that come through there, there are very few, if any, that are dedicated as I am to straightening this thing out. And I don't look at myself as a victim. A lot of people do, you know, they say, you know, I am a victim of heart disease. No, you know, if anything, you're a victim of yourself. well, it's true.
Good,
I mean, I don't blame anybody but myself. I mean,
yeah.
Oh yeah, you know, nobody brought me anywhere and stuffed anything in my mouth, whatever it may have been, and you know, whatever was done of my own volition. So therefore, you know, it's up to me to straighten it out as best as can be done. I still, you know, believe that it can be done through diet and exercise. I think that, you know, we're moving along in that way. To give you an example, they call it your heart ejection rate, or what the doctor calls heart squeeze. And right after the heart attack, it was what they call 40 to 50. And so I had an echocardiogram done last Thursday, and it was 50 to 55. So we're improving. That means the amount of blood that your heart is actually pushing out, you know, and that's good. And so, you know, My blood pressure this morning was when I first they, you know, take it before you even get started. My resting blood pressure this morning at about 7:30 was 111 over 63, I believe it was. When I left after doing my exercise and stuff, and get a, you know, 10 to 15 minute cool down, which means just sitting still or walking around till your heart rate stabilizes, my blood pressure was 93 over 59. And it's always been that way. After I exercise, it comes way, way down. And I'm not on blood pressure medicine at all. So it's, you know, I eat a lot of blueberries, which help keep the blood pressure down. I don't have the salt.
Good.
Keep the pressure down. The exercise helps keep the pressure down. Anyway, I've eliminated, you know, all the fats and junk pretty much. You know, I had a crab cake yesterday. Tammy made some crab cakes. There was no salt in it at all, and made it with, instead of a whole egg whites and some cracker crumbs that had no salt in it, and she just put a little bit of some seasonings that we have here that have no salt in it. So, you know, other than what comes in the meat itself, the crab meat, you know, that's the limit of what I take in as far as fat is concerned. So I'll watch it real close. We'll see where it all goes. I'll keep everybody informed.
Mm-hmm.
It's
very good.
I look at this, and people might get a good laugh out of it, but I'm not much of a drinker. But I look at this as no different than being an alcoholic. It's a recovery process that you'll do for the rest of your life, like it or not. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you this.
You can have fun too. Still, I mean,
I'm having fun, you can even ask Tammy when you eventually see her again at one of the shows or wherever. But I don't eat cardboard. Everything I eat is, I don't feel compelled to eat anything. Everything is tasty beyond more than likely your wildest dreams. So she makes a fantastic barbecue sauce that has absolutely no salt in it whatsoever, but you'd swear up and down it did. And it's made from, we use this Heinz no salt ketchup as a base, and then she puts about a quarter of a cup of raw honey in that, and some other spices and stuff, and I defy you to think that it's in, you know, really, I'm serious, it's,
yeah,
really,
it's amazing,
really good.
What you can do with
and
yeah.
It has nothing to do with you know, tasting horrible or anything like that. So everything I eat is not only is it healthy, but it is very tasteful as far as you know, palatability is concerned. So you know, we're very happy with that. All of that being aside, I appreciate you asking the question, and I appreciate your concern, and all the other people that have either written to me or sent me an email or whatever. I appreciate the support. But we've got a little bit of a problem floating around here called avian tuberculosis. We have done a show on this once before, probably about a year or so ago. And at the time, you know, I said, you know, this wasn't anything to, you know, go jumping off the top of your chicken coop about and committing suicide or anything else. It was one of those diseases that's been around, you know, for a long, long time and is generally considered a non-issue for the most part. You know, but what we see sometimes, we see as more and more birds are around and people swapping birds back and forth, we start to see old friends start to come out and show their colors again, and this just happens to be one of them. Now, back during that time, I had said that, you know, I did have a client that had a bird or two who lived in the over in the Ohio Valley in that way, and was having a few issues with it, and these were bona fide cases from a poultry laboratory that they were actually avian tuberculosis, and nobody seemed to get excited about it. And in actuality, up until that point in time in my whole career, I'd actually never seen a case outside the laboratory. So it's kind of interesting, and it's also challenging because these are diseases that are not fixable. As a general rule, if you have birds that come down with tuberculosis or avian tuberculosis, they're generally destroyed. We don't usually destroy the whole flock. You clean up everything as best you can. And
that's good. I'm glad. I was wondering about that.
Well,
so can you ever get the flock completely TB-free?
Yeah, you can. You know, one of the ways to do that is that first off, I want to say this. We've talked about this time in and time out on the show, and I can't stress this enough. And there's a rhyme and reason why we're talking about this today, the avian tuberculosis, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I have said it time in and time out. If you are going to bring in birds from somebody else, do your research, okay? Find out all you can about these breeds. I had somebody call me a while back here, not all that long ago, wanted to buy some birds from somebody off the Internet, and they wouldn't give them a telephone number to call them. Well, if you can't talk to somebody on the telephone about some birds that you're going to put out your hard-earned money from, I'll be darned if I'd buy anything from them. I mean, that's like, you know, going to Walmart and they leave your stuff out on the curb for you, say you can't come in. Well, why can't you come in? Well, we're just not letting anybody in today. Well, that's fine. Take your stuff, stuff it, and I'll go somewhere else. You know, and that's the same thing I told this person. I said, that's crazy. You know, if you have a problem, the only way you can deal with that person is through an email. Are you nuts? I mean, you know, they see your email, say, uh-oh, Harry's got a problem with the birds. I told him I knew it, and I'm not going to answer that email anymore, and that's the end of that. So there goes. Well, I mean, isn't that the truth? I mean, isn't that how it generally goes down? Isn't that the whole purpose behind it? Sure, the person on the other side of the thing is going to say, well, people aggravate me to death. Well, if you weren't selling junk in the first place, it wouldn't be aggravating you to death. I mean, that's just how I see it, because I see this every stinking day. And granted, this is what I do for a living, but people, come on. I mean, you know, so do your homework. Ask around, look around, find out what you can do. Do they participate in the NPIP program? Do they participate in the whole program? There's all different parts of NPIP. So saying I'm NPIP doesn't mean anything to me unless you're in the whole program where they're testing for AI, avian influenza, Salmonella pylorum and the mycoplasma, all of that, that's all part of that program. You can be in just the first part, which is the Salmonella pylorum, and that's where most people are. So being NPI certified, you know, pylorum free is nice, but it would be really cool to have the other things certified as well, you see. But people don't want to do that. You know, it's like going down to the mall, and you go into the pet store, and they've got a puppy in there, and okay, you know, and they get you in this little corral that they put you in with the dog, and a person who's going to keep beating on you till you buy this damn dog and take it home. And, you know, you fall in love with the dog because he's over there. He's licking your hand and everything else. And then you, first thing you know, the dog's a year old and the hips are falling apart and everything else. You know, it's crazy. So, and I've done it. I've done that.
It sounds like a marriage to me, you know.
Well, yeah, kind of. kind
you
of.
Never know what you're getting into.
Well, been there, done that. So, I mean, you know, I can, you know, it's the same type of thing. And I'm taking the time to speak about it again today because it is important. And it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how much money you have, it happens to everybody because you want what you want. And I'll just say this and then I'll move on, but beware of that Trojan horse. And if I've had a nickel for every time somebody said to me, well, my neighbor just didn't want these birds anymore and I took them and now everybody's sick. Well, I don't know what to tell you, you know. If your neighbor didn't want them, there's probably a reason. It was more than the fact that he just didn't want to feed them because he got tired of them being sick all the time, more than likely. But it happens every day. So we're talking about avian tuberculosis today because I have a client who obviously will remain nameless, but it's a big deal. This is a waterfowl concern. Nowhere where you folks would be buying birds from or anything like that. And but I'm bringing it up because avian tuberculosis has shown its ugly head in this waterfowl facility. And I would venture to say that this particular facility is worth millions of dollars. And they made the mistake a while back of taking in some birds that they wanted for their aviary. And it turns out now, after about a year, these other birds have all died, and the diagnosis is avian tuberculosis. Problem here being is that all the birds intermingle basically with each other. While all the waterfowl don't always live with each other, they all crap in the same pond, so to speak. And with that, this is where part of this problem comes in with avian tuberculosis, spread through the droppings. For the most part, the bacteria that causes it, Mycobacterium avium. So my whole point here is this didn't have to happen. These folks certainly know better, but they thought that they were getting some birds that were healthy from another breeder. And again, I go back and say to you, I do this every day, and I hear the same thing over and over and over. And there are people all over this country, many of them, thousands of them, that wish they never bought that extra bird, never went to the sale. You know, for the most part.
Now for Peter, for avian tuberculosis, what are the signs that you would look for? Would you look in the mouth again, like you were saying before? You went over the usual checkup, but specifically for this,
yeah.
You know, you can't give it a TB test, you know, right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, well, you can. A test of exposure, just as it would be in humans, would be to use the human time test. You know, you'd have to probably go to your state laboratory and have them get it for you, and they would probably balk like crazy to.
Yeah, but if you're at sale, you know, can have an instant. I mean, if I were like to buy a goose at some sale, what would I look for TB if I were looking for that specifically?
You would. Here's the problem with it. You're going to see the same symptoms that you would see with any other either respiratory disease or intestinal disease, because this affects pretty much the whole body, mainly the liver, but other organs of the body. You would see some diarrhea. Emaciated birds, and a lot of birds you see that go to a lot of these sales that are not regulated and stuff, you know, tailgate type things where flea markets,
right?
Where there is
so they
no
just
stuff.
Be kind of not thrifty looking. I mean, they'd have
yep.
that look kind of
yep.
hunker down and
yeah, you know, remember we said a long time ago, you know, opening up a bird's mouth, taking a look, see around, you know,
mm-hmm.
look at the back end, see what's going on. If it's got a lot of manure stuck to the feathers, you know, right off the bat that there's a problem somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
You know, if you open the mouth and the tissues of the mouth look pale compared to what you think they should look like, these are all generally symptoms, and they can be symptoms of almost anything. I would never consider buying a bird like that. I would just leave it and leave it for somebody else. You know, if somebody else wants to go in there and buy them, look, these birds are a sale for a reason, and it isn't always because they've got too many of them. Okay, and some people just don't know a good bird from a bad bird, a sick bird from a healthy bird, just as we don't. As humans walking around. You know, it's a funny thing. I'll get back to this heart thing one more time real quick. When I started reading those books and finding out that as early as the Korean War and the Vietnam War, they were doing postmortems on soldiers, our soldiers that were killed, and finding that the majority of these guys already had arterial sclerosis and heart disease at young ages, 25, 30 years old, as many as, and I don't remember the exact percentage, but I can always go and look it up, but it was above 50%. So that means that I think it was closer to 60 or 70%, which is appalling. So then, you can just sit in a restaurant and count 10 people and say 7 out of 10 of you guys got heart disease. And if you do
it, that's pretty much right, and it's still that way. I mean,
and if you do it on a statistical basis, you counted up all the people in there and divided it all out, you'd probably be statistically pretty close to coming up with 7 out of 10. You might not necessarily have the right 7 out of 10, but 7 out of 10, you're going to have a problem. And you don't even know it yet. That's the issue. And I fell into that category. I feel terrible for myself having let myself even get to that point, but didn't even realize it. And that's the funny, it's not funny, but, you don't talk about when I say funny. That's the funny part about it. You don't know it. You know, we talk about health care and we want to reduce the cost of health care. Hey, there's a good place to start. How about putting some money into that thought? But,
Peter, I've got a question for you because I've noticed it more and more, and that is my birds, talking about health care, they just prefer not to eat when I do feed commercial feeds and don't use the organic from Countryside, that they'll almost avoid it. It's like it's the last resort. Have you noticed that and that has everything to do with health care, about what they'll eat and what they'll chew down. And even the little chicks, I'm noticing, they tend not to really want to eat that chick crumble.
Yeah, we're finding, contrary to popular belief, and we can do it, I put together a show on this particular to subject.
I'd love to have that show.
Birds are... It's always been thought because of the size of their brain and the size of their mouth and the lack of salivary glands of any great degree, this, that, and the other thing, that, they don't taste things. Well, I beg to differ with you because we all know that they will take one thing and drop it and pick up another and like it.
Right.
That to me, right off the bat.
I've seen the mother hens teach their little babies what to eat. And then
exactly.
Even the mother hens now are avoiding some of what I thought it was a superior sort of chick crumble. So what's going on?
It's probably, in my opinion, without having any real scientific data to back it up, but just being a reasonable person, haven't done this for a long time.
That's what I was asking. What's your opinion? I know I've got mine.
Most of these places, including your commercial, Purdue, Tyson, and all these big companies that make their own feed and stuff, they do what they call a least cost feed analysis. This is designed to put together a feed that is nutritious to feed the birds' nutritional needs, but do it at the least cost. And whether that's putting bakery waste in or wheat mids or whatever, that doesn't mean the bird's going to eat it like crazy. And that doesn't mean that a bird is going to embrace the same thought that some human has in some feed mill somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it would surprise me that after eating the organic feed and stuff, that they may like it better. There isn't any question in my mind. I mean, you can throw out grapes and birds will eat grapes. You throw out something else and they walk away from it. I've got a friend of mine who's been playing around with different things for him, and he's just found that, and he's a gardener, and he's got a fairly decent-sized garden and what have you. And his squash is growing out of control at this point. He can't eat it fast enough, and some of them are becoming quite large, so he's been throwing a couple of day into the pen, he said, and they devour the whole damn thing. He said, they all get on
That's
it.
Right.
You think it was candy. So they've developed a taste for these different things, and I really, truly feel, and I believe there's probably enough studies out there. I've I've got a few studies that I've yet to read on these kinds of subjects, so I can go through it and then talk about it more intelligently. But I would say that it is the ingredients that they like rather than, for instance, I think eating barley, I don't like barley soups. Wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. I might eat it if I was starving to death somewhere. It was the only thing to eat, you know, knowing that. But if I had my choice of a chicken noodle soup or a barley-based soup, you can have the barley. I'll take the chicken noodle soup. That's the way it's going to be.
I'll take the barley. I like barley.
Well, you see, but your birds may not, is my point.
Right,
I know that,
okay.
I know this for a fact with pigeons. I do a lot with pigeons as well. I've got a pigeon racing program that I've put in place since 1985 for racing pigeons. It's a real simple program, and those that are usually on the program like the program due to its simplicity and the fact that it works. And we also have a feeding program that works as well. Most people don't like to use the feeding program anymore because it's hard to shop around for particular feeds and stuff for pigeons. There's so many things out there, and people get to believing this, that, and the other. But I've always given it away as I don't even give the feed thing away anymore. But as far as the health end of it is concerned, for people who want to race pigeons, it's pretty simple. You know, if you want to have birds that are going to go on a short race, you carbo load your birds before you send them out. If you're going to have birds go long distances, then you want to get your more complex carbs, but you want to fat load them too. Because once they run out of those carbs, they're going to come down, they're going to sit down wherever they can, get something to eat, and they may never come home. It just depends. Pigeons are like that. They don't all come home. And so there's been studies done. Penn State did a study years and years ago about it where they took birds, carbo-loaded, fat-loaded, and so on, and raced them different distances and saw how well they got home and who beat who. And, you know, if you're on a long race, you better have some fat in that diet somewhere because they will not make it home. And but that's another story for another day.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about that, Peter. But
I agree with you.
I'm wondering, should I even buy this stuff? And I'm not going to mention
but it seems like
it's universal.
Yeah, I think that, getting into what some guy in some laboratory thinks is good for your dog to eat versus, the dogs that they're using and so on and so forth, isn't always what happens out in the field. Anybody that's got any common sense knows that. But that's marketing. You can look at that on the human side. You know, why do we go to McDonald's and all these other places to get stuff? Because they've designed foods that are not necessarily good for you, but your palate likes them irregardless.
And they're addicting. I mean, it's been proven.
And they are. You have to. I mean, I don't think
physiologically addicting.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any lie coming there as far as food being addictive in its taste, how we like things. I can tell you even what are these little Debbie cakes they put out called. and you could and I'm trying to remember the name of them. They were kind of rectangular. They were rectangular and they didn't cost very much. But when you put that thing in your mouth, boy, you could just feel the fat in that baby. She just slimed one end aside to the other, and your palate loves it. They said, "Oh, this is good. Let me have another bite of this thing." And it, you know damn well it isn't any good for you, but your palate's saying to you, "Ooh, give me some more of this." And just you could feel the fat in the damn thing. And so they're saying the same thing, and it may have something to do with whatever grains they're using. I don't know, the organic thing. I don't know whether it's the organic part of it so much as the things that are in it from a grain standpoint is what I'm driving at.
Do you have any concerns about the GMO grains going into poultry and changing their gut physiology or their growth patterns?
Haven't seen any.
Have you read anything about
I have not seen any data to show that there is a difference there. I don't even know if there is any around. And I look at a lot of stuff.
Either. I haven't seen any data either.
Yeah, if I find something along those lines, I'll certainly let you all know. Because I'm wanting to know myself. You know, I'll say this, and I think most people with common sense would look at this in the same fashion. I'm not big on fooling with Mother Nature. you know.
Meaning, with respect to the feeds here.
Yeah, well, respect to anything. I mean, once you start messing with things, changing things around, changing the order of things, I'm not so sure that that's such a great deal. Whether it be genetically modified grains, milk, or any other thing, I would opt to eat something that is not been manipulated in any way, shape, or form. When I looked at research for myself for my heart disease, okay, I didn't look to the laboratory, okay? I looked to the people who have done the work on humans, not rats. We're not rats. We may act like it at times because of the we do things in groups sometimes.
We have digestive tracts similar, believe it or not.
Yeah.
as do pigs.
But at the end of the day, I wanted to see the research that was done on humans, and that's where Dr. Esselstyn's studies come along with 20 plus years of people who did it, and are still doing it. And not that they didn't have some, the statin drugs and stuff to help them along, but when they were told, go home and die, a good portion of them who have followed the program are still alive and kicking when they should have been dead a long time ago. Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. And his study did not require exercise. He did not want the exercise part of it to become part of the study. In other words, then after you run a study like this, then they would say, well, it wasn't this diet, it was the exercise. So if you are an avid exercise person, fine. If you want to sat on your desk all day long, fine. Let's see how it works when we just change your entire diet. And mm-hmm. I can tell you just from the things that I have done, I have, I feel better. There isn't any question about, what I'm doing. The majority of the weight that I have lost was from diet and not exercise, because only until about a week or so ago was I doing anything more than the 3 days a week that were required for the cardio rehab too. So I was doing their 45-minute a day, three times a week deal, and that's the only exercise I was getting. I wasn't walking and going crazy doing anything else. It's made a big difference there. So in answer to your question, I think that it may be the quality of the grains. Don't forget, a lot of the grains that are processed into chicken feed have been around for a good while before they get put into chicken feed. There are all
you
kinds
mean
of.
You mean they're older grains,
it depends. Not every feed mill is created equally. So they buy in a bunch of corn and soybeans, and it sits there. It might be there for six months, maybe longer.
Yep.
It may be a freshness thing as well, but it would be interesting to see. But I know that chickens are a lot smarter than people give them credit for, as far as their diets are concerned and what they
absolutely. Absolutely.
I do know
the
that.
Other thing I would add to that, Peter, before I have to sort of dash off here, is that check the dating when you buy feeds, and it's really hard to decipher on some of these feed bags. I've had to more than once ask the store manager, now, what's the dating on this feed here? And somewhere it'll be in a code, but they usually can let you know. There's only been a few times when they couldn't figure it out themselves.
It's pretty sad when they can't figure it out.
And some of them was outdated. I mean, it was clearly outdated, but...
Yeah.
It was just right up there, so freshness.
I know you got to go, and you're a couple of minutes away from needing to go, but let me just say this to you. I had a person the other day who called me and wanted to know how they could get the bugs out of the feed that they had.
Dead weevils?
Yeah, and I said to him, where are you getting them from? He said, well, when they open the bag, they're in there. I said, then don't buy it. Find another place to buy your feed. I said, that feed is no good. I said, just think of it. The weevils are in there eating up whatever nutrition your bird's supposed to have in the first place, and then your bird's going to eat the weevil who may be carrying all kinds of diseases. You don't know. So
I got a bag once with weevils, and the chickens wouldn't eat the weevils. You just watch them crawl away. I'm like, well, there goes a protein source down the drain. But like, dang.
But anyway, very quickly here now, as far as the symptoms are concerned, again, we go back, we look at, and here's the problem. This is going to mimic coccidiosis, You're going to see birds that are not thrifty, manure sticking to their back end, droopy wings, ruffled up feathers, weight loss, a bird that's not up to snuff, the coma wattles, the mucous membranes in the mouth. We talked about that earlier. They're going to be pale. And they, birds that have gone on, obviously longer the disease has been in the bird, you're going to see this lethargic thing. And I'll tell you, they get to a point, and I don't want to alarm everybody because this happens in a lot of other diseases, so that this is what part of the problem is, okay? They stop eating, as do they do in coccidiosis. So, and then getting them eating again is almost impossible. And I'm not saying every case of that is avian tuberculosis. What I'm saying is, and trying to get out here today, is that this disease is still around. It has become more of a problem. These folks who have this in their aviary are extremely unhappy because the prognosis is not good. They are in a position to do as much as a human can do financially because of their financial ability. We were talking here recently about the possibility of having what we call an autogenous vaccine made, meaning take some of the birds that you know have it, send the organs off to a particular laboratory. They will grow the organism in the laboratory and then make it into a injectable vaccine. Nobody knows for sure if it's going to work, and I'm not sure, haven't heard back as to whether they were going to do that or not. They have a veterinarian on, more or less on staff. His idea was to put everybody down, fold the joint, be done with it, and that's it. And he has a very negative attitude. Never met him, but don't like him right off the bat.
Peter, just so everyone knows, avian tuberculosis cannot transmit to people tuberculosis. It's a different...
It can transmit to people. That's part of the problem. That is
it can transmit to people.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Can very so much can be actuality.
And what's the incidence of that? And like backyard flocks, we're not talking, really, is it high or low or...
The incidence is low, only because this has been weeded out of the commercial sector for quite a long period of time. We generally don't see it on the East Coast. I can only tell you that this particular case I'm talking about is out in this neck of the woods. I won't tell you where, what state, or whatever, but it is out in this neck of the woods. And it was only brought in because there were birds brought in who were not properly quarantined from the rest of the flock, and it's a devastating thing. This is not. There are a lot of exotic birds in this particular aviary, and some of them are quite rare, and a lot of money and time has been expended over the years of getting them to where they are.
Okay, now what about South Africa's sort of little family flock owners here? I don't think I've ever seen avian tuberculosis.
And like I said, I never have either, and I've done this for a long time.
So it's not in a
flock setting, but in the laboratory, yes.
So when we go to in front of these city council people and someone says, "Oh, avian tuberculosis can be spread to humans," we say, there's not really been any cases of that with family flocks in the U.S. Is that right?
Right.
Thank you.
Right. The chances
I just
of
want
it,
to be clear because
look,
it's such
the
a
chances,
controversial issue.
The chances of you getting avian tuberculosis anytime soon are, in my opinion, about as close as you getting avian influenza. Okay. And to me, that's the biggest farce going.
Because I asked for that study that there's someone that got avian flu from their family backyard flock, and I haven't found any at all.
Not in this country.
On that.
No, I haven't seen
not
that in this
country.
No,
not in this country.
And
not
I
a
watched
single
that,
case has been reported.
That's right, and I watched that pretty closely,
okay,
too. Most of what we're seeing now, there is a active case of avian influenza down in Mexico. Which doesn't surprise me. There are some in Egypt and Asia. It seems to be a big problem there.
With family flocks again, or are now these police?
Most of the, well, it's hard to tell what family over there. 50 chickens over there is a commercial operation, if you know what I'm saying. Most of these things most of these things are where people have had very close contact with chickens, and you know they interact with their birds differently than we do here, you know, for the most part. So, and it's not in humans over there so much. You know, there's a few cases here and there. And I would suspect at this point that a lot of this stuff where it has shown itself in humans is probably due to people who have and may not have even known it, but they have had, you know, maybe an impaired immune system or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah.
But this readily infects swine, mink, rabbits, sheep, pigeons, and rodents can be carriers.
Well, again, readily infects, but hopefully not in the backyard.
And again, you know, most of the time when we see these things, we see them in larger settings and particular areas of the country. Again, the Midwest and the North Central states, not as prevalent in the South and the Far West. The thought in some of these areas, the cold months are more favorable to it to keep it going. But it has not been a problem in any commercial flock that I'm aware of. And this is not a commercial flock. This is a private enterprise that does not obviously sell birds. There's no birds for sale market-wise or anything like that. This is just a terrible, in my opinion, tragedy that didn't have to happen if proper biosecurity and things were going on, this wouldn't have happened. But the problems we see with this, again, mostly attacks the liver. There are problems with birds being positive, not showing any symptoms at all. The younger a bird is exposed to it, the less we see problem-wise until they get
people,
older.
I mean, people can be carriers of people's tuberculosis. Peter, I'm going to have to shuttle off here. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge on this show again. I always learn so much.
Sure,
and
Whisper,
thank you for creating the show and bringing us all together here. Where would we be without you?
You're welcome.
Yeah, so all that is to say, as I sort of exit stage left, may the flock be with everyone. Thanks so much, and God bless. Bye-bye.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business, providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for the beginner or advanced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it comes time to order. Shop online at www.strombergschickens.com. Call today at 1-800-720-1134. Remember, that's StrombergsChickens.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton.
Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So, spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're talking about avian tuberculosis here today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Visit him online. Check, you know, in just about anything you need to maintain a healthy flock, he has in his store. So, again, that's FirstStateVetSupply.com and also home of the $25 Ask the Chicken Doctor consultation. So take advantage of that when you need to. So, Doc, welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. Thanks for all the information so far.
Sure. Yeah, I want to wrap up here with this thing
Okay. Real
quick.
Great.
We said that, you know, one of the big deals is that, you know, upon when you do a postmortem on them, you're going to see this enlarged liver. And the difference between this on a postmortem examination, if you were looking at, like, let's say, lymphoid leucosis, which may give you some of the same symptoms, okay? You can get a birds with lymphoid leucosis, same thing. It's a problem with the liver. It is a disease that's not curable either. And so what you're going to see with the lymphoid leucosis, which would be what we call a big liver disease, but you're going to see a huge liver. You may see the same thing with avian tuberculosis, but one of the differentiating factors would be that there'll be nodules, little lumps and bumps on the liver with the avian tuberculosis, where generally with the other one they're not. The nodules can appear to be yellowish in color and sometimes a grayish color. Okay. And generally, just like with a lymphoid leucosis, you'll see this liver can be discolored too. It's most of the time the liver should look bronzed, and lots of times with the lymphoid leucosis, you'll see a little yellowing and a fading out kind of, you know, the yellow might fade to some purplish-looking color rather than that bronze color that you would normally see with a liver. So just so that if you're ever looking at it, you know, when you start seeing nodules on there, that should be a flag. Still doesn't necessarily mean it could be, you know, foul collar or some other damn thing, but something to look for, and that differentiates. And that's, again, one of the problems with this disease. The other problem with this disease, too, is that young birds can be developing it, And it's a slow type of a thing with young birds. It may take as many as 2 years to develop within a bird. So if a person were thinking along the lines that this may be a problem and you live in one of the areas of the country where this at one time was very prevalent, and it does come from the soil, by the way, that's one of the ways that it can be spread. So when you start seeing this this type of behavior in your flock, if it's not controlled by your normal coccidiosis type products, your sulfadimethoxine or your Ampryl, your Chorid, I'd start looking around and not necessarily point at this test, but I would certainly look to something else. And that's why I bring up the lymphoid leucosis, because it can very closely mimic this thing. So if it's spread through the droppings, it could be spread by rodents, it could be spread by a number of different things, as I said just before Pat went off the air. Mm-hmm. So just know that it's out there. And you know, I never expected this to be a problem in this particular aviary. It is. They've got a monumental problem and a monumental decision to make. You know, do they take millions of dollars worth of rare birds and put them all down, clean the place up, and call it a day? Or do they spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a vaccine to vaccinate all the birds in hopes that it'll work? And the issue then is, if you vaccinate the birds and you stop the mortality, but can you stop the shedding of the organism and the droppings, which will perpetuate the thing? So they've got a lot of work ahead of them. I was an unpaid consultant this time around on this particular one, did whatever input I had into it, was strictly from the bottom of my heart because I feel for these people and these birds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, prevention of this thing, just like I said, know where your birds are coming from, buy from reliable sources, ask the pertinent questions. If you're going to pick them up, they don't look right, leave them right there. If people don't like you for it, that's okay. You don't need those kind of friends anyway. And it's you know, and this goes for any other disease that's out there. Just be cognizant of it. You know, that's why we do this show, to make you folks aware of things, what's going on, to help you out the best we can. I may sell medications and stuff, but it's not all about that, and we all know that. It's trying to keep the birds as healthy as we can, and I don't care how you do it, as long as you do it. And one of the ways of preventing this is to don't let it in the first place. And when you see a problem with your flock, don't be closed-minded and minded about it, and figure that you know this is the disease that it is, and you're going to treat it that way because that can come back to bite you too. So you know, when you see this any kind of symptoms in your flock, whether it be something that you think might be towards this particular disease or coccidiosis or something like that, you know, give it a good look, and you know, if you need help, holler. That's what we're here for, try to help you out. So anyway, one of the other things that I want to talk about, Andy, we can move on if you don't mind.
Okay, that's perfectly fine, sure.
I think that it's appropriate, again, to obviously to talk about hot weather. Starting to field some calls from some folks that had some birds succumb to the heat, mostly accidental, didn't think that things were going to turn out the way they did, but they did. And so I thought it was time to just go over a few things real quick and make everybody, I know most of the people probably listening to the show are pretty much aware of this thing, and this has been going on for a few days, in some places more than a week. But I see on the news today that Macon, Georgia is supposed to have about 108 today, I think they said. So I don't know how close
yep.
it is to you, but it's probably, if it's there, it's not too far from your neighborhood.
No, Macon's only about, depending on what part of Macon you're going to, about a 50-minute drive.
Okay, so 50 minutes away.
And we're further south of Macon, so we may even hit hotter than that.
You may get hotter than that, yeah. But first things first, I would certainly make sure that I was putting out more water than I normally would put out, so that birds don't have to go too far to get to water. Having your water in the hen house during the day, I don't know what, you know, some people do, some people don't. Some people have it appropriately put out outside so that birds don't have to go inside. But I would make it so that they didn't have to go too far to get water, and I would try my best to make it as shady as possible wherever they're going to get their water. And in this kind of heat, I would change it as often as I was able to do so. And I do understand that not everybody can run around all day long and just change water left and right. But so some of the things you can do, add additional waterers or watering space so that the birds can don't have to travel too far in the heat. You want them to have as little exercise as possible during this heat spell, during the heat of the day. Use fans at night to, because I know around here the last couple of days we've had temperatures over 100 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 11 o'clock at night it's still 80 some odd degrees outside. And, you know, and here, I don't know about other places in the country, but here we are blessed with ungodly amounts of humidity. So moving the air, and one of the things you can do, you know, that there are ways to get cool air to your birds, but you know you could, and I know this takes a little bit of inventiveness, but you can go to Lowe's and you could pick up some of these little sprinkler nozzles that they put around in gardens that don't put out a lot of water. You don't want a lot of water in whatever you do some of these cooling type things because they create more problems than they solve. But you could take a piece of burlap, and you could hang that burlap, and you could put a couple of these nozzles, maybe even one, to make the burlap wet. And you could have a fan blowing through that burlap and creating an evaporative cooling effect. So this is something that you can do as well. You can get foggers, make foggers. We sell the nozzles here. I've got some little kits that I put together for some people today that want to put together their own. They get all the parts. All they got to do is supply the pipe and the glue, and for $10 they can get a nozzle and set up that's going to hook up to their hose and put out 0.8 gallon per hour. Whether you get it from me, get it from somebody else, really doesn't matter. The matter of the fact is, if you can get it, use it. It's a relatively inexpensive way and usually an effective way of creating evaporative cooling. vitamins, electrolytes in the water. Certainly appropriate for this kind of weather, day in, day out. It should help keep the birds from dehydrating totally. The problem with when birds start to pant, usually above 80 degrees and with some humidity thrown in there, you'll start to see birds that will start to pant. When they start to pant, they get the carbon dioxide exchange in their body out of whack, and they start to change the pH of the blood and so on, so they don't pick up as much oxygen. They actually have more trouble breathing then, similar to humans who may be subjected to areas of high pollution in your, some of your inner cities and things like that. So you want to try to prevent the panting as much as possible. And again, I do understand that, you know, not everybody can do these things. Adding ice to your waterers helps. But that in these kind of temperatures, I don't know how effective that would be. You would imagine you'd have to change it pretty often. Don't feed your birds in the middle of the day. They will not starve to death, and most of them don't want to eat it anyway. So what I would do is put out feed early in the morning before the sunrise or before the sun is up to any kind of heat, and I'd pull the feed away from them. One of the reasons you're going to do this is when you, whether it's a human or any other animal, as you're eating food, as you're digesting it, you're giving off heat. And this is the last thing they need when the temperature outside is over 100 degrees. So feed them again later in the day as the sun's starting to set, then you can go ahead and give them all the food that they want, and they'll digest that overnight and be free of all that heat and stuff overnight. So that's the reason, rhyme and reason that you're going to do that. Provide shade where you can, even if it is, means that you put up a lean-to that keeps the direct sunlight off of the birds. You know, you can do those kinds of things. You can put if the birds have to be inside or they're in a covered run that's got a hard-type roof on it, you can put your sprinkler up on your roof. Certainly don't want all the water to run down into the pen where they're at, so you might have to make some adjustments there. Adding some vitamin C to the drinking water, and I know it's pretty hard to get some of that, but as a general rule, if I were going to use it, I would use a product called Ester C. It's not hard on the birds, and it stays in their system a little bit longer and can help control their body temperature. Worst comes to worst, if you've got a bird that is really in trouble, I would just get a bucket,
totes work real well for this. Fill it up with some cool water. You don't want it to be super duper cold because the
right.
shock of the transition
mm-hmm.
can be something to give them a heart attack itself. But just put them in the water and lift their wings up and let that water get under the underside of the wings, and that should help cool them down. That's why up close to the body there aren't a lot of heavy feathers. There's down feathers. That's part of their cooling system. That's why birds will droop their wings, spread their wings out. It's an attempt to get that heat out from the body. So, don't crowd them up. Don't round them all up wherever you're going to put them in the heat if you're trying to keep them out of the way and so on and so forth. Don't allow them to get too close to each other, because they won't want to be too close to each other in this kind of weather. They're going to want to be out there and getting away from each other. So if the only thing you've got is a sprinkler and they're not afraid of it and they're willing to go and sit under it and get wet, and let them go. But these are all some of the things that you can do: providing the shade, providing fresh, clean, cool water as cool as possible. These are all things that you can do. A fan, even if it's a fan out in your yard that just moves the air and the birds stand out in front of it and that type of thing. Anything to reduce the amount of stress that's going to be on the birds. And lots of times when they get to that heavy panting, they are in trouble already. And so you want to try to prevent it from getting to that point. Nobody wants to have to bury a bunch of birds. And it shouldn't really happen at this point. Shade, again. The vitamins, electrolytes, air movement, day and night. And obviously, if you're going to use a fan, you want to make sure that all your electrical connections are good and everything else so you don't have one problem begetting another. And that's pretty much all I have on that. There is some evidence to show that sodium bicarb being added to the water, about a gram or so per gallon. Usually you can get about 5 to 7 grams on a teaspoon, so you just use that as a judge, maybe one teaspoon of maybe 5 gallons of water would also help mitigate the heat with the birds. And that's about it. I don't know if anybody's got anything else. Andy, you got anything else as far as that's concerned?
You talked about it earlier, and it's been sticking with me. I wanted to comment, too. It amazes me how many people will go to some of these auctions and buy birds. You got to think, and like I said, you can probably find some good healthy birds at these sales at these poultry shows and whatnot. But like you mentioned earlier, these birds are for sale for a reason. I mean, here are all these fancy top notch birds, and then you go to the sale place and you got to think, why are these breeders? Are these the breeders' cull birds that you're trying to sell and make a little money off of, or what's the deal? So you got just be very, very careful. I'm not saying they're all sick or they all have issues or they all don't meet the standard, but just use due diligence and be careful. Whether it's at a poultry show and you're out in the show area, or you're going to one of these, some of them are just horrid auctions that take place all over the place, that where they have the swine and the chickens and anything and everything there. And ask yourself, why are they selling these birds? Or where do these birds come from? You can't see the facility they were raised in or they were coming from, based on the mounds of poop that they're walking through, the cleanliness of the water, or anything like that. So and then you take them home and you just say, okay, here you go, and add them to your flock without keeping them in quarantine for 30 days and looking for snifflies and sneelies and any types of disease or illness or anything like that. And I think you're just asking and begging for trouble by doing a lot of that. And like you said, the NPIP, I personally, I give that just a grain of salt, because who's to say that today when they come and inspect the birds, they seem to be fine, and then lo and behold, tomorrow they eat some rat poop, and now they're infected with something.
Sure.
And 364 days, they're going to be infected. Today they weren't infected because they got tested today, NPIP. Woohoo! I got a piece of paper. All right. And I'm not discounting it, folks. Don't get me wrong here. But literally, I mean, the issue is that today they do the test, and everything's fine. Tomorrow they eat some rat poop and they get this disease, and they have it for the next 364 days until the inspector comes on your property again next year and does the test again. So I mean, that's a valid, I think, arguable, non-arguable point there, that, MPIP, I guess, if people look at it, if they're going to take the time to do this, to add one more thing to their reputation of having birds, fine. A lot of people won't go to that trouble or what have you. But, I mean, I've seen some birds in some pretty not-so-pleasant conditions get NPIP approved. So it's, you know, just one of those things. Think of, you know, today they're fine, tomorrow and the next 364 days till they're tested again, they may be sick as all get out.
Yep.
So, you know, just use due diligence and like you always say, Doc, look at the surroundings, you know, drive on by, do yourself a favor. Say my car broke down, my battery died, whatever the case may be. Or if you're there, say, you know what, now that I think about it, I really don't have room for these chickens or to, you know, so I'll just pass after you go and look at them. If you have to walk back there to the area and do your and again, think about this. You know, you go to this place to look at their chickens, you walk back to your place, and what's on the sole of your feet? You know, think biosecurity, you know, what's, you know, you walk there. And it's just so much to think about. I'm not saying that, you know, you can't live in a bubble, but it's just one of those things. Use some common sense. So,
well,
Doc,
you know,
thank you for...
Mm-hmm. So many times, you know, we have talked about this, though. We've talked about it so many times, all of these different things, and I will say that, you know, I do agree with you. The one time a year, and they don't test the whole flock as a general rule. They test a percentage of them. If they're negative, they just, you know, and there is some validity to doing it the way they do. You know, percentage wise, it works out that they probably, if they're you know, doing all the different pens rather than just pulling them all from one pen and that kind of stuff, but. You know, the NPI program is a good program. I don't want to poo-poo it and have people think, you know, that this is a you know, miserable program. It's not. It's what has helped clean up the entire backyard market, so to speak, and the commercial poultry industry as well. But with that being said, just because, you know, somebody has the piece of paper and the certification. Does not necessarily mean that you won't get birds from that particular person that don't have other abnormalities that are either not covered or weren't covered by this program. Some people are in the full program, and at least that is something is better than nothing. I would probably look to somebody who is in the full program being tested for the AI, the Salmonella pylorum, and the MG, because at least there you know that there's three biggies that you're not more than likely mm-hmm. going to have to handle. But that in and of itself is not necessarily it. I will say this to you, and I said this again. I had a client that had gotten in some birds from a very well-known judge, and actually was to this judge's house and brought back some problems. And I said to that person, you know, why did you? Well, I committed to him. Well, you know. You commit Harry Carey then. I mean, geez, you know, is that what you do? Instead of saying, well, you know, I changed my mind, and now you bring these in, and you got problems with them, and just because he's a judge? No, I don't think so. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to be prudent about what you do. Hey, folks, your money, and it'll be your money to repair the problem afterwards. So, you know, it's just one of those things. But keep them healthy. That's all I can tell you. Keep them out of the sunlight. Keep them alive. Keep them going. If you need me, I'll be around.
Exactly.
We'll do the best we can. Andy, if you want to talk next time about water quality, we can do that and do a couple other things.
That sounds like a plan. I'll be in communications with you regarding a show next Monday. There may not be a show next Monday, and I know there won't be one on the 16th. So we may have one next Monday. If not, it'll be the 23rd before we get back into the groove. But I'll let you know.
All right, no problem. Whatever you want to do is fine with me.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you very, very, very much for joining us, folks. That's Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Joins us every single Monday. If you have questions about your flock, send him over an email, and he's got the chicken consultation program for just $25 consultation fee. He can help you out, and especially if you don't have any chicken experts in your area, you know, think about what you have invested in your flock. Get reliable information, not just information from what somebody looks up on Google and then types as their own on a blog, not just what someone may post in a forum, but real information, right information, and who has stuff that they can, you know, that you can get to actually help cure and hopefully heal and save your entire flocks. $25 for a consultation fee, which in most cases is refunded when you buy the meds you need to save your flock to begin with. So, again, firststatevetsupply.com, firststatevetsupply.com. In fact, we'll be back with our daily secret password right after this short break.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Oh, yeah!
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying tuned today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And I just want to give you all a little heads up. Today's secret password is COOP. Today's secret password is COOP. Now, if you're just tuning in, what does that mean? Today, we have started a new chicken coop contest. Yep, how awesome is that? We just gave away a chicken coop Friday, because we had the Fan Appreciation Month in June, and we gave away a chicken coop. Well, hey, we give away more chicken coops than anybody on the planet, and we're striving to continue that. No one could ever catch us. But we're giving away a coop here in July. It is the Snap Lock Chicken Coop. And you can visit them online at Snap Lock Chicken Coops, with an S, snaplockchickencoops.com. And really cool, only weighs 40 pounds, snaps together with your two hands, not a single tool required. It's a great micro coop and houses about 3 to 4 large fowl chickens. And we're giving one away towards the end of July. So every single day, weekday, okay, every single weekday between now, today, Monday, July the 2nd, and Thursday, July 26th, that's 19 weekdays. We'll be issuing a secret password on our Facebook page and our Twitter page when we do have radio shows, because for 2 weeks in July we'll be traveling a good bit, but we will be posting the password every day on our Facebook and Twitter page. So that will be your kind of your foundation there to where and go to get those if there's no radio show. But so there's 19 weekdays between today and Thursday the 26th, and then if you're the right caller, if you tune in on Friday the 27th and you're the right caller and can recite all 19 secret passwords, then you're going to win this awesome, awesome chicken coop from snaplockchickencoops.com. So very, very cool. It's about a $450 value, and it'll be shipped right to your front door. So again, today's secret password is COOP. So, hey, y'all have a great day. Tune in tomorrow. I did get an email from Arlena. She is working tomorrow, so she won't be able to join us. But I believe I have a guest signed up. I got an email a few minutes ago. So it looks like, well, in fact, some good news. A good news guest tomorrow regarding some chicken laws. So very, very cool for tomorrow's Tuesday show. Again, there will be no show this Wednesday, celebrating the awesome holiday, Independence Day, and then the Thursday and Friday. So we'll see you all here tomorrow on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer on Blog Talk Radio. We hope you can join us. Have a great day, everybody.
¶¶